Okay, greetings and salutations, everybody. I am, as always, Kevin, a.k.a. Darth Devious, and with me, as always, is Charles.
And I'm the brain.
And welcome to episode 4 of Who Gives a Hoot. Today, on the agenda, we're going to be kind of bouncing over the two episodes that are in the middle, because they'll be in the next part. But we're going to be discussing Father's Day and Voomtown. And the next episode, which we're actually going to record right after this one, is going to be The Empty Child and the Doctor Dances. So, we might only record about a half hour or so for each episode. We have to record two episodes back to back simply because Charles and I are going to be at the same convention next Sunday, in Oaks, Pennsylvania, and that's the RetroCon convention. So if you're in the area and you want to check out the RetroCon convention, you can come meet me and Charles in person.
You know what? Speaking of that show, we should end up, like, if this show really becomes ultra popular, we should talk to the organizer of the show and have, like, a live recording at the show.
Considering that Rose and Tony are really good friends of mine, that's probably easy to do.
Mm-hmm. we'd have a captive audience for once.
Yeah. Have an actual video go up instead of just the audio.
Yeah, because isn't that guy Michael Brogo there too?
Yeah, I know he's going to be recording for his show. I actually was asking Rose when she was first putting this together if she was going to have panels at this one. She said she wasn't doing panels at this one, but she probably will for next year. And she wants me, her and I were kind of throwing it back and forth about me doing a panel on how I make my YouTube videos and stuff. Mm-hmm. Things like that. So I might do that, maybe do like a live toy review or something like that there next year. So let's jump right into our episodes. Father's Day is an episode where Rose really shows how selfish she could be. In the episode, she asked the doctor to bring her back to the day her father was hit and killed by a car. And he had originally died alone in the street. And Rose didn't want him to die alone, but instead of going to run to him when he got hit by the car before he had finally passed away, she asked the doctor if they could try again. And the second time, she actually pushed her father out of the way of the car, which caused a paradox. Mm-hmm. And these bat-like reaper creatures came and started just vanishing people and buildings and everything else. And they were only safe inside the church. Even the TARDIS was affected, because the doctor goes to run back in the TARDIS, and it's just a regular police box. So, I honestly say that showed how selfish Rose could be. I mean, she, even the doctor called her a stupid ape in this one.
Mm-hmm.
So,
But you know, think about it. The whole idea of going back and stopping a loved one from being killed, especially in that type of, you know, accident, that's probably in everybody's mind where something like that has happened, because it's like, you know, you kind of wonder, like, could have something have happened, you know, someone has stopped him, could someone have, you know, pushed this, you know, so-and-so out of the way. So it's kind of one of those things where, yeah, it was very stupid and selfish thing to do, but it's also something that it's almost an impulse. You just can't sit there and watch, you know, your father or your mother or someone get killed and not do anything.
True, but there are consequences to such things. I mean,
yeah.
There are consequences to time travel all the time, and that's what the doctor always has to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as he pointed out, when his people were around, they would have simply fixed it themselves, and it wouldn't have been as big a deal as it was now that they're practically extinct. He can't fix it himself. And, you know, the universe is trying to put itself right by using the Reapers. All because, you know, there's a man alive now that wasn't supposed to be alive. He was supposed to be dead.
Yeah.
So, It's an interesting episode. It's a little more on the dramatic side than some of the other Doctor Who episodes. It's, even the Doctor gets vanished by a Reaper in it.
Yeah.
And only at the end, with Pete actually going out and sacrificing himself, dying the way he should have, because the car kept appearing and disappearing, going past the church, constantly. And he threw himself in front of the car to die the way he was supposed to, and that reset everything. But the second time, he got to sit there, or Rose got to sit there with him as he was dying. Yeah. And, it kind of, at the beginning of the episode, you saw Rose's mom telling her a story when she was a little kid about her father. And at the end, you see the same story being told, only this time she tells, her daughter about how there was a blonde girl sitting, holding his hand as he died. So that was nice. Nice end caps to the episode. As far as the story arc goes, it isn't that important. I think Rose finally does learn that she can't have everything the way she wants, and that there are reasons for things being the way they are, and that she really needed to, that she I think she realized it, that she had been so selfish at the beginning and ignorant of what could possibly happen if she tried to change time that way. Know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, your thoughts on this episode?
Well, like I said, I mean, it is something that you think about, you know. I'll give you a really good example. And this, you know, this is something that is kind of personal for me, but, you know, it just shows you an idea. My mother passed away suddenly back in 2001, and I never got to say anything to her. So admittedly, you know, if I had the chance to do it, I would probably do the same thing. I would probably want to go back and at least, you know, say something to her before it happens. But at the same time, you know, she died by basically taking a nap and she never woke up. Would I want to sit down and just talk to her and keep her awake? Or maybe would I take her to the hospital to check, you know, if something was wrong with her? I might. I don't know. You know, just, you know what's going to happen. So you can't just sit there and not do anything, even though you know there will be consequences to whatever you do. But I mean, you know, again, like I say, it is a selfish thing to do. You know, things happen for a reason. People die for whatever reason, and in some cases it makes you a much different and better person because, you know, no one can really say what would happen if someone hadn't died or someone had died or whatever, so.
Very true. Very true. That's life though, isn't it? All of us will die one day. Mm-hmm. There will be people that we leave behind that will wish that it hadn't happened. Wish they could do something about it, but they can't. It's just part of life. You just have to accept it.
Yep.
You know? So. I really don't have anything really bad to say about this episode. It's not the best, but I think the way it played out worked out really well. Rose's father had been built up all these years as being this great man who always had all these ideas and all this other stuff, and then it turns out that the reality was he was not that great, not that clever. His schemes didn't work all the time. They do go into it in the next season with the two-part Cyberman episode where they went into an alternate universe and her father was successful. All his mad schemes did work. He didn't get killed. But at the same time, they didn't have Rose. They were rich, and they had a dog named Rose.
But, you know, the thing with that, too, is, you know, with her finding out her father wasn't as successful as he'd let on, that's another little theme that seems to go along with Doctor Who is, especially when he visits historical figures, you know, people are built up in history as, you know, very glorious, you know, figures. And sometimes if you meet them, they're not quite as impressive as you think they may be.
This is true. Sometimes the reality is they were just trying to live their life the best they could, and they just got caught up in situations that made it seem like they were great.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very good, yeah, and it does seem to happen a lot in some of the Doctor Who episodes, especially with historical figures. I think one of the best historical figures episodes that has been done in recent years was the one with Van Gogh, Vincent and the Doctor. That was probably one of the most moving historical episodes they've done.
Mm-hmm. Which, actually, I just watched that one yesterday, and it was a really good episode.
I think I had a couple tears in my eyes at the end of that episode the first time I watched it. it's crazy. I think it was the whole scene where him, the Doctor, and Amy are laying on the ground looking up at the sky, and he takes their hands and they can see the sky the way he sees it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty cool. And then, you know, it goes to the season finale for that episode. So yeah, historical episodes, or even, you know, something as simple as, you know, Pete Tyler being, you know, having this legend around him, this, he was such a great man, he was this and that Rose's mother had always said. She meets the real man, and her mother and him are fighting all the time, they're none of his schemes work, they're broke, all this other stuff. And still, in the end, he is the better man because he does go and sacrifice himself for everyone else.
Yep.
And puts things back to where they're supposed to. So, yeah, not much else to say about this episode. It's a good one. It's one you could probably check out. Rose really does learn a lot about the responsibilities of being a time traveler in that one. Now, of course, the next episode in the series would be The Empty Child, but we're going to skip over that because we're going to do that in the next episode since it's a two-parter. So we're going to go into Boomtown, which takes place right after The Empty Child and the Doctor dances.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts off with the Doctor bringing the TARDIS to Cardiff, parking it right on the Rift so it can refuel. Now, by this time, Captain Jack's in there. I think we'll talk more about Captain Jack in the next episode, simply because that's where he's introduced. And Mickey meets them there. Mickey travels to Cardiff, meets him there so that he can give Rose her passport, even though the Doctor told her she doesn't need her passport. And that was just Rose's way of trying to get Mickey to come so that, you know, she could spend some time with him. Which was nice, but I think he still felt, you know, that he's gotten shafted all this time, being left behind. Which was, you know, his own choice, basically. He was so terrified of what was inside the TARDIS that he didn't want to go near it. At the same time, you find out that the new mayor of Cardiff is actually Margaret, the last of the Slevin family that had survived the World War III episode.
Mm-hmm.
And she's up to her own tricks. She's trying to create this nuclear power plant that will be designed to go, you know, into meltdown and destroy the city so that she can turn that into fuel and all the other stuff. You know, same old thing. Try and get her revenge for what had happened. And in a very hilarious scene, you know, the Doctor goes to her office. He goes up to her secretary, tells him that the Doctor's there to see her. Secretary comes out and he's like, well, she's got a lot of meetings and she's got to go somewhere. And the Doctor just goes, she's crawled out the window, isn't she? Mm-hmm. And then in almost like a Scooby-Doo type chase, all of them try to track her down and chase her down. And she's got her teleporter. But every time she teleports, the doctor just hits his sonic screwdriver and she comes right back. That scene is pretty funny. I will give it that. It's also nice that you don't really see too much of the actual Slovene creature inside. It's mostly just Margaret herself. I thought the scene, with Margaret and the doctor in the restaurant was done brilliantly. How he's looking at the menu, not paying attention to her, and she's doing all these things to try and kill him. She poisons his drink. He switches the drinks real quick. She tries to fire a poison dart out of her finger at him. He catches it, not even looking. Then she says she could take the poison from the dart and put it, exhale it from her throat. And as she starts to exhale, he just sprays her with something in her throat. It's very well done.
Yeah, it's one thing I liked about Chris Eccleston as a doctor. He was a really good broad range actor, but he really played the doctor as a bit of a smartass. he was very, very cocky. And I think he was one of the cockiest doctors that there ever, at least the ones I have seen that has been so far. You know, some of the doctors are more, you know, kooky, more silly, but he definitely had the, more egotistical aspect and just like, yeah, I can do anything I want to.
Somewhat. That scene though was really nicely played. And she was trying to guilt him into letting her go. Because basically, if she's returned back to her home world, Rexicoracal Falipatorius, everyone say that 5 times fast.
Nope.
That, she'll be executed for the crimes her family committed. So, basically, she's trying to tell the doctor, if you send me home, I'm gonna be dead. You know, it's a death sentence. And, he's not falling for it. Not at all. It doesn't bother him one bit because she's killed so many. But she also points out that the doctor has done the same thing. And that little bit does affect him slightly, but not enough. Now, all this was a ruse by her, and she had a device that Jack actually brought back, Jack and them brought back to the TARDIS and hooked up to be analyzed. And the device was some sort of cosmic surfboard thing that caused the rift to open up and all this other stuff, and how everything's going to get swallowed into the rift because the TARDIS is sitting on top of it. And she was just going to pretty much destroy the entire planet, and she was just going to ride her way to freedom on this board. Don't know how that would have worked, but it's interesting. I mean, it works for the Silver Surfer.
Yeah, but that was silly.
It was. The effects were cool, though. I mean, that was pretty cool. And Rose and them run back to the TARDIS, except for Mickey. Mickey runs off. And, because I think he's finally had enough. And, as things go on, the TARDIS, one of the panels opens up on the TARDIS console, revealing the heart of the TARDIS, and it reverts Margaret the Slovene back into an egg. And the doctor said, well, we'll just take her, put her back into the hatchery, and, she'll be raised by a different family, and maybe she'll come out better this time. You know, she gets a second chance, after all. Not the way she expected it, but she does get a second chance. And then, of course, the doctor is able to, you know, undo the damage with the rift. And that's about it.
Yep.
It's not as silly as World War III and the episode before it, the Aliens of London. I think on her own, Margaret was a better character than she was with the other Savine. Because at the beginning, she was going to kill this one reporter that had figured out what's going on about all these disappearances that were taking place. And when she learned that the woman is pregnant, she changed her mind and actually started crying.
Mm-hmm.
So she figured, you know, it was interesting to see that, you know. There were some really funny parts, and it's a better episode than a few of the others. It's still not up there with some of the really great episodes from the season, but it's fun. It's fun to watch. Simply for the scenes with them chasing her out of the building and her trying to get away with a teleporter and that doesn't work. And then the scene with her and the doctor having dinner. Those two scenes are executed really well, and they almost make the episode. And the ending's kind of like a little cheat, I think. Yeah, I don't know if the TARDIS can actually just, you know... I guess it could, because it controls the time vortex, but it's just a little bit of a cop-out, I think, with her getting turned back into an egg. You know.
Yeah, but, you know, it's Doctor Who. Can't expect it all.
Yeah, I know. You don't want to see too many executions on Doctor Who, I guess.
Well, I mean, if they'd done, they could have done it off-screen. You know, just, oh, she got executed, and, you know, oh.
Yeah.
That's one less windbag we have in the universe.
I mean, the Savine did show up again, not really in Doctor Who so much, but in the Sarah Jane Adventures. And I think they worked well with the format of that show because it was more kid-friendly, and the way they look is more kid-friendly. Yeah, they're not really brought up again in New Who. It's just... I don't know. I still don't like them as aliens. I really don't. They don't stand out to me as being good ones. I mean, they're not up there with... They're definitely not up there with the Daleks or the Cybermen or Silurians or anything like that.
Well, with Doctor Who, I mean, it's like with any good science fiction show that has a multitude of aliens. You're going to have, you know, the really popular ones, you know, Doctor Who has the Daleks and the Cybermen. You know, you can look at Star Trek and say, you know, they have the Klingons and the Romulans.
And the Borg.
And then you go down to, like, you know, Doctor Who has the Slovene. Star Trek has...
Ferengi. Ferengi.
No, I also say the black and white people.
But that episode was more done for social commentary. I mean, as far as races go, Ferengi, when they were first... shown, they were supposed to try to be menacing and this and that, but the way the first episode they were in worked, they were goofy and comical, and it wasn't until you got to Deep Space Nine with Quark that Ferengi actually started to be more of the way that Gene Roddenberry envisioned them.
When you got ears that big, you cannot be menacing. Simply, it's an impossibility in the universe.
Yeah, I still think the Slovene are the most annoying alien race in Doctor Who. I'm sure something else more annoying will come up, but...
Well, they just fart a lot, that's all. I mean, they are literally the windbags of the universe, you know? See, that's one thing I never understood with the Slovene and their race. They're trying to, like, destroy planets to create fuel for their world. Didn't they ever watch, like, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome? As much farting as they do, they could probably just collect all the methane gas that comes out of them and just recycle it into natural fuel. I mean, it'd be awesome.
Well, the Savine themselves, they're just a family. They're just trying to sell the fuel to everyone in the universe to get rich. That's all it is. It's a get-rich-quick scheme on their part. I don't know how their actual race acts. as far as, you know, everyone else in the universe. That we don't know too much. And it just seems that the worst aliens in Doctor Who come from their solar system.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got, you know, the Raxacorical Phalloptorians, and then you got the aliens from Clum that absorb people.
Yeah. Yeah, those are the worst ones.
Oh, that episode. That episode needs to be a recording all on its own. Oh. I will not watch that episode at all. That and Fear Her, I just can't stand at all. Really. So yeah, I think that Boomtown, it's a decent episode. It's pretty, it was interesting to see them, you know, show the consequences of Margaret getting away at the end of World War III and what she had done.
Mm-hmm.
For budget reasons it worked because they film in Cardiff anyway. So they probably saved money since they were using a local area. That's the thing. There wasn't many episodes of the first season of Doctor Who that took place in many alien landscapes. There was a lot that took place right in England. I mean, yeah. Father's Day took place in England, even though it was supposed to be the past. It was still England. They didn't dress anything up because it wasn't that far in the past. They didn't have to dress it up that much. Boomtown takes place in England. Aliens of London in World War III takes place in England. The very first episode took place in England. So you see, there wasn't many places for them to go.
I almost wonder if that was just a simple, you know, an effect of the fact that they just brought the series back, and even though they did have a few really good off-world effects-heavy episodes, they really wanted to be a little light on it so they could kind of see how the show was going to be perceived. So
maybe to help develop the characters more, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting theory. Yeah, we're actually going to cut this one kind of short, because as I said, we have to record a second episode so that to cover next Sunday, because we record these on Sundays. And right now it's the 4th, and next Sunday, the 11th, like I said, Charles and I are going to be at the same convention. He's actually driving up from North Carolina. Have fun with that.
Oh, it's going to be a blast.
And hopefully he'll have time to actually stop by my house on the way up, because I live literally right off of I-95 as you go into Pennsylvania. It's a hop, skip, and a jump. It's not even a half mile from the exit ramp to my house.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be cool to see him the day before and just hang out for an hour or so before he has to go up to his hotel. Because he's staying right across from where the convention's happening.
Thankfully.
I don't need to do that because I only live like a half hour, 45 minutes from there, depending on traffic. Mm-hmm. So. Do you have anything else to add about these two episodes? I mean,
Well, me personally, I did enjoy the Father's Day episode a little bit. Like I say, I mean, I agree with her being selfish, but at the same time, I can see her reasoning behind it. Boomtown, I love seeing my farting aliens come back because they're just fun to watch, if anything else.
I see them fart so much.
I know. It was like I was disappointed. That was like my only disappointing episode. It's like, where's my farts? Come on, bring them on. And she was a lady. She was trying not to fart as much. She must have been pulling some Silent but Deadly words.
Well, if you want to say that though, but in Aliens of London, she was, you know, farting in front of people and she was going, ooh, I'm shaking my booty and stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. I don't know how much of a lady she was trying to be. I know she, I think towards the beginning of the episode, she, there was a couple fart things in there, and she's like, ooh, it must have been something I ate for dinner or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Two decent episodes. Of course, they don't compare to the two episodes that take place in between them. Yeah, so this episode, I think we're gonna cut here. We're already at a half hour. Not really much more to say about these episodes. There really hasn't been much as, in the way of Doctor Who news. I mean, they keep putting out some more set photos, for either the Christmas episode or maybe even for, the other half of the season. I'm not sure yet. I saw one with, the Doctor and his new companion on a motorcycle. I saw another one with the Doctor in a field with a green screen behind him. Nothing too much else going on in the world of Doctor Who, other than that Matt Smith just had a birthday recently.
Mm-hmm.
So he's getting up there in age.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping he sticks around just a couple more years longer. I really like him as the Doctor. Eccleston was good too. All the ones from New Who are probably, they rank up there with some of the better Doctors that, that there's been. One of these episodes we're gonna have to do like a look back at each of the Doctors and just how we each feel about them. I know you haven't seen too many of the older ones.
Yeah, I gotta go back and start watching those.
Yeah, gotta give you some time to catch up. So I guess we're gonna end this one here. Short episode. Apologize for that, but you know, with the convention coming up, we just wanted to get, make sure we covered the next 2 weeks so that we're good to go. So again, this is Kevin, aka Darth Devious, and with me as always is Charles.
Yes.
And we will talk to you next time on Who Gives a Hoot, where we shall be discussing The Empty Child and The Doctor Dances, which were Stephen Moffat's contributions to the first season and are regarded as being the greatest part of Christopher Eccleston's run as the Doctor. It's going to be an interesting talk, I think. Because there's a lot of good stuff in there, plus we'll probably throw in a few minutes of discussing Captain Jack as a character himself. And that's about it. So, till next time, which for us will be in a few minutes, and for you guys will be in a week, we'll see you, out there in the interwebs. Goodbye, everyone!
See ya!